What's up, everybody? It's Lee, otherwise known as Intuition, and you're listening to Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in. It is appreciated. Things are going great so far with the podcast. We really appreciate all the feedback we've been getting. It's been really fun to do it so far. I'm having a great time doing it. I am going to ask you guys to do some favors for me. What I need you to do is go to iTunes. Search for us on iTunes. Search for Kinda Neat. Subscribe to us. Even if you don't use, you know, a podcast system on your phone or a podcast app on your phone or on your iTunes at home, if you don't listen to podcasts that way, just subscribe to us anyway. It's just helpful. Stream them, listen to them, give me feedback, tell me who you want to see on the show. I love that kind of shit. I love engaging with people who listen to these. Been getting a lot of really cool feedback so far and cool suggestions for people that you want to see on the show. So that is appreciated. Follow us on Twitter at That's Kinda Neat. Spelled how it sounds. And then, the YouTube stuff. We just hit our first 100 subscribers on YouTube, and both of the first two videos have each hit 1,000 views, which, relatively speaking, might not sound like that much. I know a lot of you guys know a lot about YouTube, and a lot of you found out about me on YouTube, and in the grand scheme of things, 1,000 views, it ain't really shit. But let me tell you, I am appreciative of every one of those views, and they're just gonna keep getting better, and the videos are gonna keep getting better as I relearn this process. So yeah, go to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/thatskindaneat. Subscribe to that, comment, like, share with your friends. The artists that we have coming on are going to be fucking awesome. Today, we have an old friend of mine named Speak. I met Speak a very long time ago when he was just a wee lad of 17, and he drove up from Riverside to Santa Barbara, where I was living, with a guy named 60 Cycle Hum. And he was already loud and boisterous and crazy back then. And as time has gone on, that character has just come to solidify more. I love the kid. Great dude. I learned a lot about him today that I never knew about him. And so hopefully you guys find this podcast interesting. I tried to avoid talking to him about the same shit that everyone talks to him about, you know, because everyone knows, oh, Speak. Yeah, Speak's the guy who wrote Gucci Gucci. But there's a lot more to him. This is the podcast with Speak. Before I get out of here, make sure to follow my man, Ben Shim, on Twitter, at IamDatabase. That's my dude. He's helping it run smooth. He's making the podcast sound all delicious and delightful to your ears. Doing a great job. Very thankful to Ben Shim. Follow me at It's Intuition on Twitter. And fucks with us. Talk to us. Like I said, we'll talk to you back. Tell us your suggestions. Tell us what you want to hear. And just subscribe and help us out. Every listen counts, and we love you guys. So here's the conversation with Speak. What's up, man? What have you been up to?
Oh, man. Trying to finish this album. Trying to get my life together. Watching a lot of Soccer with Ty.
What's the harder part, getting your life together or finishing the album?
I think they kind of go hand in hand. When my life is in disarray, so is, I think, the productivity of actually recording music. Not making it, like not writing the songs, but it's when I write my best, but it's also harder to really focus in and be like, all right, fuck it. I'm going to really finish this album. I've been trying like hell, goddammit. So it's close. Everything's finally like the stars are lining up and everything's like coming together. And I'm very happy.
Why has life felt like it's in disarray?
Sometimes it just is. Maybe it's my own undoing or, you know, this subconscious self-destruction tendency. I don't know. I try to like steer away from that shit. But sometimes, you know, it just is. So, you know, you can't really explain it.
Do you have a tendency to self-destruct?
That's what they say, but I don't.
Who's they?
Them. Them. I'm doing the quote-unquote fingers. No, I don't think self-destruct, maybe. Maybe my stubbornness and my unwillingness to compromise kind of fucks up certain opportunities that might present themselves, you know. But yeah, I don't think it's self-destruct. I'm getting better with it, you know. I'm getting better with it, and the music is coming, and so yeah, I'm happy.
You got any examples of the outspokenness and stubbornness biting you in the ass?
Yeah, like when I think one of the classic story that seems to circulate around the music industry circles, like when I went to New York, I kind of went I went to work on a deal with Universal, and they wanted to give me a shit ton of money. And like I had this big freak out.
When was this?
This was like maybe like a year ago. I had like this big freak out, and they put me up like in this nice 5-star hotel across the street from fucking Central Park. And I had a freak out, and I threw a refrigerator out the window
of the hotel.
Yeah, like on some like Keith Moon shit. But here's the thing though, it wasn't just like, oh fuck it, they want to give me money, I'm freaking out, oh let me be rebellious or whatever. I think it was just like I was in New York by myself, and that was my fault. I should have communicated with like the whole team and taken everybody, but you know, I'm a fucking dumbass. But I went, and you know, we went for some meetings. And I thought they were just going to be like regular, hey, sit down and like play some songs. Yeah. Talk to us about your music and your artistry. And what happened was it was like some like 90s like showcase shit. So I went to the fucking label, and you know, next thing you know, like all the A&Rs and the people come out, and they fill this room, and they hand you a mic. They're like, all right, rap, perform some songs. And I was just like, dude.
How many people were in the room?
Dude, all the A&Rs. It's like everyone. They cleared the whole fucking office.
Like 20 people, 15 people?
Maybe about like 30, 35 people. So it's all the people from the...
In like a boardroom.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're just at the front of the boardroom?
Yeah, and they're like, all right, perform. Like, give us like a set. But the thing is, they told me like right before everyone came into the boardroom. That's what they told me. Like, oh, by the way, you got to rap. And I'm just like, and I don't have a problem with fucking rapping. I don't. I really don't. I'm good at it. I do it, whatever. I like, you know, flailing around on stage and being a rapper and all that shit. That's cool. But like, I think it's just like the snakery of it and like the deceptiveness of it just really kind of like, it rubbed me the wrong way. But I killed shit, and they offered me a deal, and like, I was mad. Like, I had like, I'm pretty sure. By pretty sure, I mean I'm positive I had, like, a panic attack. Like, when I got back to the hotel, like, whoa, what the fuck just happened? And instead of, like, you know, like, talking it over with the people close to me and my team, I was just like, ah! And I threw you know, a refrigerator out the window. And then I got really drunk.
Did you look to see if anyone was walking by before you threw it?
Fuck no. So I'm sure Universal wasn't happy when they got like a check from the hotel saying, hey, why is our refrigerator missing?
Well, thank goodness you didn't end up in jail for it.
Dude, I'm so fucking thankful. Praise be to Allah. What I did was, though, the next night, I was supposed to stay like for more meetings, like another 3 days. But like I booked a flight back, and I was like, I'm going the fuck home. And and I went home.
Have you heard from Universal since?
No, sometimes they send me some nice emails. Like, the funny thing is, like, those people, not just like Universal, but like people I've met in the journey, they send, you know, it's not as cold and callous as people make it seem, because they do check in like, hey, how are you? Like, fuck the music. Like, where's your head at? Like, are you doing okay? Like, and I think that's nice. So I had to get over the initial fear of like, and paranoia of like, oh fuck, everyone's trying to ass fuck me and like take advantage of me and like ruin me, and you know. But this is what you come to realize, right? Like when you sober up from that rage and paranoia, you realize like, oh wait, like dude, it's like a business. Like, you know, they're trying to give you money in exchange for your goods and services. It's a job. And the thing is, everyone's like, man, they're trying to sabotage me and stuff. And I thought that for the longest time. But all they can do is present opportunities and fiscal resources. And it's determined on your work ethic and how creative and hardworking you are. That determines how you're going to succeed and advance. And, you know, there is a give and take, and you know, not everyone gets their way, but I wasn't used to that. But I've learned it now, and I'm just like, all right, you know, sometimes some outside input, and that really helps. That really helps, because I'm used to like, all right, fuck it. Like, I got this piece of album art, I got this song, it's going live tomorrow. Fuck the repercussions. We're doing it this way. But you know, but like, the real world doesn't work like that.
Do you think the problem lies within the fact that everyone that's creative has a little bit of crazy in them as well, and that the business aspect of the music industry is trying to kind of contain that craziness in a controlled environment?
Sometimes, yes. But the thing is...
Because I think you're a little bit crazy.
A lot of people do. But, you know, I could accept it. But it's not like an act of invention or being like, oh, I'm so artsy and I'm so different. I'm a fucking lunatic. Like, no one wants to be
known. I've known you since you were a kid. Yeah. You're just kind of crazy.
Yeah, no one wants to be known as that. Like, the fact that that's kind of like the reputation that I built. And I have no one to blame but myself. So I accept it. I'm a fucking grown man. I accept it. But no one wants to be known as that. You know, you don't want to burn bridges and opportunities and because it's, you know, and throw money out the window. There's a way to navigate and negotiate. But I was just so used to like, all right, I'm going to fucking bulldoze everything. Fuck it. Burn it. That was like the thing for the longest time. Like, fuck it. Just burn it all down.
Do you remember the actual performance or did you kind of black out? Cause I know that you're kind of a wild performer in general. You know, you shoot off confetti and fucking dry hump things.
Yeah. I remember dry humping a couple interns and like, it was really, that was fun. I was rubbing my crotch on them. It was dope. And then I know for a fact I said some like really like in between songs, like, you know, instead of like the audience banter, I vented my frustration and I said some very unprofessional things, you know, like, so I'm not too proud of that. And I wasn't trying to be like, oh, I'm crazy, I'm destructive, I'm rebellious, look at me. It's just like, I was so mad, you know, and that's what happens.
So why'd you go out alone instead of taking some of your comforting brain trust with you?
Because I'm a fucking idiot. Because I'm a moron. No, I don't know.
I mean, did you tell anybody you were going out there?
There was talks of it, and definitely the people around me were like, yo, all right, just let us know. We could do it. That's fine. Like, hey, that's a wonderful thing. Absolutely. We can handle it, but just let us know. And the thing was, I was in Florida working on a project, and I had no intention, like absolutely had like no intention of going to New York by myself, like at all.
Did you have management at the time?
No, not really. I had people vying, you know, and offering their services. And that's how that meeting came about. But so I was in Florida and I'm just like, you know, I'm gonna go home. And they're like, yo man, like, you know, they started to hit me up and apply that weird pressure, like, yo, you know, this is a big opportunity, just come. And I'm just like, you know what, fuck it, I'm just gonna, like, literally, like, hours before I made the decision, is like super impulsive and it was just stupid in hindsight.
So you didn't stop back home in LA first. You went from Florida straight to New York.
Yeah. I went from Florida straight to New York.
What were you doing in Florida?
I was working on some music, like
with Juicy J.
Oh well, I think did we do that? We worked on some stuff on that trip. And I also, like, I was fucking around with some people, like, in Timbaland's camp, just doing some songwriting stuff. And, in hindsight, it was just all so fucking stupid. Like, it was ridiculous.
Have you always been that way? Were you kind of self-destructive as a kid? Were you in trouble a lot?
I was in trouble a lot, but I got really, really good grades.
I could see you as being the kid that gets good grades, but also always has some smart-ass shit to say to your teachers.
Because I thought I was smarter and better than everybody. Yeah. This really unnecessary, like, intellectual superiority complex.
Was there a certain moment that sticks out in your life when you realized, like, oh, wait, I think I'm smarter than my teacher?
Probably when, like, in elementary school, they were trying to tell us, like, the story of, like, the Mayflower. I remember it. I was in, like, first grade. Miss Del Pizzo was my first grade teacher. And she was trying to tell us the story of, like, the Mayflower. The Nina the Pinta the Santa Maria, right? Columbus sailing the ocean and to discover the new land and, you know, discover it. And I just remember saying, I remember specifically raising my hand and saying, how did he discover it if Indians already lived here? And when you're in first grade, like, you know, teachers don't want to hear that shit. They want you to be like, all right, yeah, we had the first Thanksgiving and they ate turkey and everything was fine and dandy. I was like, well, how do you get to that to, okay, now these folks is living in reservations and fucking huffing paint, living off of, you know, government pensions. So, like, you know, like
that was your first moment of critical thinking that you recollect.
That's probably the first time, because like the kids around me didn't get it. They were like, what? You know, he discovered it. I'm like, no, like people were living here, like, you know, hunting and gathering.
Columbus came over here and fucked everyone.
Yeah, you know, and gave everyone fucking syphilis and like gonorrhea. That's what they did. Yeah. And like the Spaniard, like conquistadors and the explorers, they were really out there like fucking little girls and like doing all, no, seriously, like doing fucking weirdo shit. So it's just like maybe that was like the first time, you know. So and then I remember like she had like a conference, parent teacher conference with like my mom and my dad. She's like, well, maybe your son is, you know, gifted and talented. I didn't even get into like the gifted and talented program. They said I wasn't really wasn't gifted and talented. And then I remember I told the test proctor, the administrator, I was like, you obviously don't know what you're talking about. I think I called him a liar. I was like, you're a liar. It's like, your son's bright. He's not gifted and talented. I was like, you're lying.
I ended up in the gifted and talented program as a kid, and it was because I remember in third grade, this teacher used to always come in, and she would take all the kids that were they were the ones who were consistently getting the good grades as well, and she would take them away for an hour, and then they would come back, and I'm like, hey, how come you're taking like Jamie and Marshall and all those kids to the gifted and talented thing? I'm like, I'm way smarter than them. and my mom was a teacher at the same school, and she goes, hey, Karen, Lee actually referred himself to GT. I think he wants to be tested. And then lo and behold, I ended up in there.
I remember the test specifically was a lot of like shapes, like recognizing like different patterns and things like that. And I just remember thinking like, even as a kid, I was like, this is fucking bullshit. Like being able to differentiate like geometrical patterns and, you know, the different sequences doesn't determine how intellectual you are or how talented you are. I remember thinking that, like, you know, not in those words specifically, but I'm just like, how does this make you smart doing these fucking puzzles and, you know, these shape puzzles? So I don't know. It's really weird. It's kind of like the thing, like, oh, well, getting good grades necessarily doesn't mean you're smart either. It means you fucking focus, you apply yourself, and you have the discipline to jump through the hurdles and get the good grades. You know, because I know people who were fucking genius at, you know, chemistry, and, you know, they got their degrees and this and that, you know, but they're fucking, not because they're genius, or just because they're hardworking and they're willing to apply themselves, so... Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of weird.
Do you apply yourself?
At times I do. When I'm focused in and like I'm really inspired and, you know, and I have the blinders on, and I'm just going at it and I'm really doing the whole practical application thing, like I don't think anyone could fuck with me. Like on stage, whether I'm writing a song, like I feel like I'm the best in the world.
Do you feel like life is better when you're applying yourself?
It probably is, really. Like, the money's probably, like, coming in, like, really, really nice, and I'm probably, like, fucking, like a beautiful girl. But, like honestly, it's all kind of a blur, because I don't really notice it, you know? I have the tendency of fucking up really good things, but it's never on purpose, you know? But usually, like, when I'm focused in like that, I don't really kind of process everything else that's happening. I'm like, oh, I have a really good-looking girlfriend, or, oh, wow, I got thousands of dollars in the bank, and like I'm living really good and I'm eating steak, and you know, I mean that stuff is happening, but I don't think I really get to enjoy it or process it, because it takes like every ounce of my being to like focus in and be like, all right, I'm gonna finish this album. And
where does the self-destruction come from, do you think? Because I see a lot of myself in you, like, full transparency, like, yeah. I met you when you were 17 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
I was probably a few years older.
Yeah, yeah,
and we
definitely
were like going to a battle.
Yeah, yeah, it was me, you, and like After One, yeah, and the joint custody.
We've
guy.
Always gotten along well.
Yeah, definitely.
And we've
definitely
always remained close. I'm asking, I guess, about the self-destruction thing, because I've always seen the same thing in myself, too. I feel like I fucking blow opportunities as well.
Well, what do they say comes before the fall, right? Pride. It's probably pride, and it's definitely ego, and it's a whole bunch of things. The unwillingness to compromise. But for some reason, for the longest time, I always kind of rationalized it as, if I'm compromising, I'm not being true to myself, mm-hmm, and I'm being a fraud, and like that irks the shit out of me. It has nothing to do with like, okay, underground or this or that. It has nothing to do with any of those kinds of theories or whatever. It has to do with like how I feel on the inside, like how it makes me nauseous. It makes me sick to my stomach. But then like, so that's for the longest time, that's how I rationalize it. But then I'm just like, whoa, wait a second. Like sometimes like you have to compromise, like whether you're in a relationship or whether you're in a job or like you have to. Very few people in this life can, you know, just get by bulldozing, doing everything 100% their way. Probably one person, his name is probably fucking Prince, right? Prince does whatever the fuck he wants, you know. But like, even like, you know, Beyonce's and the Jay-Z's and the Kanye's, you know, okay, yeah, they're bosses. They're the bosses. They're calling the shots. But you got to take in mind, they have people around them who are offering advice and, you know, trying to look out for their best interests. I think the trust has a lot to do with it, too. Maybe for the longest time, I didn't really believe that people had my best interests. Even my closest friends and the people who I love and dearly and the people who love me. But I'm getting better with it.
Well, and I guess that's where I'm coming from. Is like, you know, they always say anger is a secondary emotion. When you're angry at something, it's really because you're probably sad or insecure about something.
Yeah, yeah.
Defensive.
Yeah, yeah. They definitely go hand in hand.
I think a lot of my self-destruction comes from, like, fucking depression and shit.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, like, does that affect you or anxiety or, like, what is it with you?
I definitely have anxiety. You know, I've never, like, and I definitely have, like, depression. But it's normal to, though. The person who's on the fucking freeway driving to work and has to be in at 9, who's sitting at traffic 30 minutes away from their job, you know, they're stuck in dead traffic and they're 30 minutes late. They're going through anxiety. So I think it's a normal thing to have anxiety, but it means you're human and, you know, and your receptors are working. And it's okay to be sad and depressed and be in mourning. Like, that stuff's perfectly, you know, okay, but it's the human experience. But I think at the same time, you can't get sucked into all that. And it's easy to. It's so easy to get sucked into all that. But you gotta cope with it. Mm-hmm. So maybe sometimes when I'm sad or you know, going through one of those bouts, my coping mechanism is just, you know, hellish fucking, I don't give a fuck. I'm gonna fuck everything up, which fuck is, you know, it's so stupid. It's so ridiculous. It's not cool and it's not funny and it's not glamorous. You know, maybe like people on the outside looking in, right? Like, oh wow, like, whoa, look at, like, oh, Sid Vicious was such a fucking rebel. He was a fucking junkie, right? There's no glamour in that. There's no glamour in being Elvis Presley and dying overweight on a fucking toilet seat. You know, but again, we're getting better with it. I always kind of think of it like, you know, like the whole focus thing. Sometimes, like, I always equate things to boxing, right? Life is a fucking fight, right? So you're a boxer. I've seen guys who are like the most talented fighters ever buy into, like, their own, you know, belief that, oh, they're the fastest, they're the strongest, they got the best technique, they're never going to lose, right? So they might slack off, the focus shifts. They buy into the hype, they don't fully train and prepare, and then they go in the ring and get knocked out by literally a bum who had that hunger and had that determination and had that focus to be like, all right, I'm not going to blow this opportunity. So I think about it like that sometimes. I just don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the hot and cold guy or the inconsistent, and sometimes I am.
You grew up boxing, huh?
Yeah. Well, I used to box a little bit, yeah. I love it. Love it.
Where did you start that at?
Back in, like, Riverside County, because I was born in East Los Angeles. My dad's Mexican, big fight guy, big guy. And, not big fat, but, like, big, burly, athletic guy. And he was just, you know, and I had two older brothers, and instead of, like, bitching and crying when they would slap the shit out of me, he'd be like, yo, all right, I'm going to show you how to throw a punch, you know? So, but love that shit.
How much older are your brothers?
Man, one is 30. My oldest brother, Nicky, might be 36. My second oldest brother, no, he might be like 34. I don't know. We really don't keep in touch with him too much at all, really. And it's just problems. Like, him and my older brother, Matthew, like, you know, I love them. They're family. But it's, if you saw them standing, I always say, if you saw them and me, you know, we're standing in a line, you'd be like, there's no fucking way they're related. Like, you know, just in physical appearance, you know, like the body build, the color of skin, they look like fucking cholos, dude. They look like straight up like cholo lowlifes. Like,
and then you have a younger sister too?
Yeah, I got a younger sister. She's like 16. And a younger brother who I fucking love.
Oh, so you have 5 siblings.
And I'm the middle child. You're the middle. So no wonder, like, that explains everything, right? But the thing is, like, I don't know why it's like that, because, you know, my parents, I think I'm, you know, my brothers and sister will probably kill me for saying this, but I'm probably the favorite. Oh, actually, I know I am. My parents are, like, super proud of me. You know, they didn't want me to go down this route, but they see that, you know, like, the talent and blah blah blah. But my parents love me, and they always showed me attention. Like, I remember growing up, I mean, my parents, they would discipline me when I got out of line, but they would always show up to like the assemblies when I got like honor roll or this, that when I was a little ass kid, and they'd always tell me how smart I was and how proud they were that I would come home and I'd do my homework. You know, I wouldn't even, I want to play first. I'd come home and I'd do my shit and I wouldn't ask them for help. Like, I ain't never asked my parents for help. And my parents are very smart.
I feel like younger brothers are always more competitive because rather than trying to keep up with the kids their own age, they're trying to beat their brothers at shit.
I just wanted my older brothers to leave me alone, to be honest. Like it was hell, dude. Like, I mean, I love them and I understand, but they were fucking no good, you know, rotten to me. Like, not on some like big brother, I'm going to give you like a noogie type shit, or I'm going to, you know, or, but you know, they were like, this is a borderline almost like abusive. Like they would beat me up like I was, you know, their peer or something like that. They would come in the room and they would smash up the toys and, you know, slap the shit out of me for no fucking reason at all.
When you say they look like cholos now, were they involved in gang stuff back then?
Yeah, like, you know, like stupid, like little click banging. It's so fucking stupid. They had the little, they had, you know, their cut up Ben Dickey slacks that they cut into shorts, and they had their high socks, and like, you know, they would bring guns into the house. Like, that was, you know, they got kicked out of the house at an early age. They got kicked out of the house at an early age because they were, dude, doing drugs, doing all kinds of just stupid bullshit. And like, the thing is, like, I never claimed to be like, oh man, I'm the toughest guy, or I understand fucking hood life. But I do understand what it's like to be poor and to have people you love who are caught up in that, because I saw it quite often. Not my parents, but my older brothers, who I have no idea why they were like that. My parents were good to them. And I just realized, like, yo, that shit is not cool. Like, I understood it completely. And I understood at an early age, like, I don't want to be that, and I don't want to be a part of that. Like, I just knew as a fucking kid. So, like, that shit's weak, man. Anyone with half a fucking brain will tell you that it's not fun.
What did your folks do?
My mom was doing, like, clerical work for I think, like, an elementary school. I'm trying to think. I think the school is called like Honey Hollow. I don't know why that has anything to do with anything, but she was like doing like receptionist, like teacher aid type shit. But it was only seasonal, you know, like year round, I guess. It was like a year round school. And then my dad was like rolling cylinders at an air gas company, like filling air gas orders and stuff.
Do you have generations of family in LA, or did your folks move here from somewhere else?
No. Yeah, there's like the family's pretty much. I mean, my parents came from different countries, but we're now in our, third or fourth generation. Like, my grandparents came from different countries. My parents came from different countries. But I'm, like, the third, yeah, I think third generation.
So, wait, they're from different countries. Dad's Mexican?
Yeah.
Mom's Jewish?
Yeah, my mom's Israeli.
Israeli?
National.
Did you grow up practicing Judaism?
They tried to put religion on me, but I really wasn't into it.
Which one was sticking out more? Like, I assume Catholicism and
Judaism.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't into any of that shit. Yeah. I thought that shit was a sham, too.
At a young age?
Of course. I was, like, and that's the thing. But when you're raised in a religious household, they do not want you to question. You don't question, right? You go to church or you go to temple and you do this and you do that, and you do it because, you know,
when you say why, it's because of faith.
Yeah, why? Because this is what the Bible says, or this is what the Torah says, or this is whatever, you know. But to me, I'm like, well, why can't I make that decision? And I understand, I guess it's a parent's obligation to raise their kids and instill faith in them, but I don't think you can instill faith in anybody, you know. Like, I think faith has to be developed, and it has to be kind of that personal understanding, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you could see things that cultivate that faith, right? Like, say I don't know you, right? And, oh, well, Lee's that guy over there, Intuition Lee, he's the best person ever, you know. Well, I don't fucking know that shit, but if I see you fucking, you know, save a kid from getting hit by a bus, or, you know, or feed the homeless, you know, cultivate that faith. Oh, I have faith in him. That guy is a good person. Like,
to be fair, you've seen me do that like once.
I have. I've seen you do a Christian feat of strength
I ripped some phone books.
Yeah, you ripped some phone. You were part of the power team. Yes. No, you, and I think it was Harvest Crusade 95. Did you not bench press an 83 Buick over your head?
Only two reps, but who's counting?
In the name of Jesus.
Yeah. So you didn't make the cut for gifted and talented in elementary school.
Yeah, fuck
but that. Like junior high, high school, what were you like then?
I was listening to a lot of rap. And like,
what was the first rap you got into?
Man, well, rap was always around because my older brothers were into gangster shit, West Coast gangster shit, like G-Funk shit, Snoop, Dre, Warren G, you know, West Side Connection, stuff like that. But they also liked a lot of the Texas shit too. And I think they liked it for the same reason I liked it, is like the bass and the way the beats rode out really sounded like some West Coast shit. You know, they were just rapping differently. And so, I mean, that stuff was cool. I remember knowing all the words to, like, you know, Nothing But a G Thing and, like, the songs off Doggy Style when I was a little ass kid. But, like, the first shit, like, I think got into, like, when I was in middle school, After One, who's, like, one of my closest friends, and, you know, we grew up down the street together, he was, like, the only kid in school who had Quali and Mos Def or Black Star. He might have been the only person in town that had that CD.
Knowing Manny, that makes so much sense.
No, but he was just always cooler than everybody. He was like, dude, he was like 6th grade, 7th grade, he was breakdancing, and like, I remember I was into like Dragon Ball and stuff.
Did he have the giant afro back then?
He had the small curl. But I remember, like, I have a funny story with him, and like, he denies that it ever happened, but it really fucking happened. We had this mutual friend, this Chinese kid named Poilock Choi, and you know, and the first time I met After One, like, me and Poilock were like talking about like Dragon Ball or something like that. And then After One came in, he had like some Adidas like fucking like a track pants, and like he had some like breakdancing goggles in this pool. And we're talking about it, and he just walked in, into the conversation. He's like, Dragon Ball, huh? That's for gays. Like, it like really happened. I was like, fuck, I hate that guy. But then, like, we became friends. But he was, like, the first dude. Like, he had, like, Mos Def and Quali or Black Star. He had, like, Soundbomb. And he was just fucking cool. And, like, it, like, really hit me to, like, a lot of, like, dope rap shit.
In 6th grade?
I was, like, 7th. It might have been about 7th grade. That's right. Yeah. 6th grade, he called me a fag, and I hated him. I do recall that. And then 7th and 8th grade, we became friends. And, like, 9th grade, we became, like, best friends.
And that was your partner in crime.
Dude, yeah. That was, like, dude, like, everything together, like, fucking no homo.
The first time I met you was I had a friend named 60 Cycle Hum, Josh. Remember?
Dude.
Remember that? When was the last time you heard Josh?
He was so fucking tight at everything.
He was very talented, and he looked like Paul from The Wonder Years. Like, he was so small.
Dude, on that trip where we first met each other, when we were going to meet you in Santa Barbara, Me and Afta One rode with him. I think we were still in high school.
You guys drove his car to my house, at which point you got in my car and we drove to the Bay.
Yeah. So we're driving up there. I just remember this fool Josh, like, and he was all, dude, he had like the 5 panel caps way back when, like, he was really on that shit. And he was a little bit older than us, you know, even though he looked really young. I just remember him smoking a cigarette, and Afta's like, yo, man, can you pull over? And he's like, I gotta go to the bathroom. He's just like, no time, man, just stick your wiener out the window. and then like, you know, and I don't know why.
He's a character.
Dude, he's just like, no, but he's just like, you know, taking drags of the cigarette. No time, man, just stick your wiener out the window. And like, he was dead serious. Like, he was not playing. And like, and then I remember we're driving up the Santa Barbara coast, you know, going to meet you. And After One, you know, like, we're both like, we had never seen Santa Barbara or anything like that. So we're driving up the coast like, fuck, man, this is really beautiful. And this feels like, you know, like, wow, this is really tight. Like, wow, we're doing something. And this was taking drags of a cigarette. I don't like the fucking ocean, man. Well, why not? Too many fucking fish. Like, what? Like, dude, he was so tight. Stick your wiener out the window.
Man, I love that kid. I haven't talked to him in years now, but man, he was so funny. Like, back then, that was like on the old AOL days.
Yeah. No, he was, and he could rap well, and he can make super dope beats.
Yeah,
like,
he had stories. He could tell stories in his raps. But you and After were already like a solidified rap duo at that point. Like, when was it that you guys came up with Soul Rock Affiliates?
Maybe that's a fucking gay name. Maybe like when we were like 9th grade or something like that. He made beats, and like, he got really good because he was always like beatboxing and shit, but he got like super, super dope at making beats really fast. Like, for no reason. He's one of those guys who's good at everything he does.
Did you guys just start rapping together because you were friends and like you were just got into freestyling
together or something? Yeah, pretty much. And I mean, like, when we were like freshman high school, we had older friends, this guy named Mike, this guy named Will, and this guy named Dominic, and they all and they were like seniors, and they would rap at lunch, and they were super tight, and we're just like, yo, let's go hang out with those guys and, you know, fucking rap and shit. And yeah, so those were the homies. And now, you know, they all still have their hand in music. Like, Dom lives, like, in Australia. And, like, lives like a really cool life. He's got like a fucking gorgeous Australian girlfriend, and like he DJs like really, you know, dope clubs in Australia and makes really cool mixes. And like, yeah. So, but those were that's kind of like segue into us making music.
What was the first song you guys recorded? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't know.
I bet you do.
No, I don't. I'm not trying to be evasive. I don't know.
Is Salt Rock Affiliate some shit where if it leaked on the internet, you would be embarrassed by it?
If you would have asked me that question a year ago, I'd have been like, yeah. But now I'm like, no. Because I've never made any claims or accusations of being something I'm not. And I'm proud about that. You know, that, like, dude, that's who I was when I was fucking 15, 16. Like, why? I mean, I'm sure it probably sounds corny or it looks ridiculous now in hindsight because I'm such a different person. But that's what growing up is, you know, like... That's what being human is. You know, I kind of equate it to, I guess, like if my parents saw a picture of themselves in like the 60s or 70s, they'd be like, oh my God, I can't believe I wore that. I'd probably be like, I can't believe I said that in the song, or yeah, I can't believe sounded so horrible.
When you look at yourself in a mirror every day, you don't notice your changes.
But yeah, like, no, you don't.
If you look at a fucking picture of yourself from 10 years ago,
yeah, you're like, what the you fuck don't was, notice what it. Was wrong you with don't me? Notice it until it's almost like fucking 8-10 years later, and you're like, oh man, my hair's long as shit now, and I have a beard, and I don't fucking look like Fat Mark Cuban anymore, and I don't got the LA and I don't got the fucking LA
you
looks
did look
on
like
my hair.
Fat Mark Cuban,
yeah, no, but I was always charming and charismatic. So
you guys graduated from high school the same year, you and Manny?
Yeah, we graduated from high school the same year. And
where'd you go? UC Riverside
for a little bit, and then I went to Cal State Fullerton, and it just didn't work out. Like, I wasn't...
Did you guys go to college together as
no,
well?
No, he didn't go to college. He knew from the jump that he wanted to do music. Like, I remember, like, when everyone's taking the SAT, the ACT or whatever, he was just like, fuck that shit, man. I'm going to make music. And I'm like, fuck, I want to do that too. But he was actually like... And I knew I always wanted to do it, and I was going to do it. But he was the first of, like, anyone I had ever met... Who just said, like, it was a super brave move. He's just like, fuck it, I'm going to do this. And, you know, I'm going to make it happen any way I can. And, you know, to be, like, 16, 17, that's some bold shit, right? Especially when everyone's around you. I want to go to Harvard. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. You know, like, he was just like, no. Nah,
he's like,
I
want to be an okay player.
Yeah. I want to wear a dashiki and live in the woods. He was just like, he was about it, and he made it happen.
How long did you guys keep trying to make it work?
After high school, we knew it was fucking over. Like, we knew. Because it was just, as similar as we are, we're very different. And, like, we just didn't want to, I mean, we still have and still do collaborate, and, you know, he sends me beats and we'll make songs. He made a really sick beat for the last album, but it's just like, okay, we're too different, and we want different things out of this, you know. So it was the casual drift. It sucks at first, cause then you feel like really fucking alone. Like, oh damn, what the fuck? You know, but dude, like, but nothing really changes. It's just like, oh, okay, we don't make music every single day, but like, that's still like my brother, dude. We've fucking done a bunch of psychedelics and hung out in the desert, and like, you know, like, yeah, that's
so shout outs to AFTA One. If dude, you guys aren't familiar with his music, go Google him.
He's a genius.
AFTA-1.
Dude, he's a fucking genius, and there's only like a
lot of good music.
Yeah, well, not even a lot. Just like, that's what's so tight about it. It's just like the body of work. There's a few like really, really sick remixes that he's made for other people, and then like an album, and then like an album he made in a week. So there's not that much, but what there is that exists is gold, and it's like, it's so fucking sick.
So then you're in college and...
miserable.
You went through a very heavy battle phase. Can we talk about that? Do you ever talk about your battle
phase? Yeah, well, I don't really talk about it.
Let's talk about it, because it's funny. It's funny in hindsight.
Well, no one ever brings it up, but like... Kids are starting to, like, now that, like, things are starting to pop, kids are starting to like discover that.
Oh yeah, you can still find old videos.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh no, that didn't happen. That didn't exist. Like, dude, I was racking up hundreds of thousands of views on the internet when I was like fucking 17.
That's the thing, is that we've been around through a few different generations of rap and rap on the internet. And so,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, one of the first big waves of YouTube was like, you know, on beat battle rapping.
Yeah, definitely.
That you was, were good at it.
But it's like, it's so corny when you look back at it, because it's all like formulaic and like set up, punchline, set up, punchline, set up, gay joke, set up, your mama joke, set up. Oh, this guy's black, this guy's Chinese. So it's like really, you know, it's just like playing the dozens. Like you just, you know, barring someone up, talking shit about him, but on a beat. But this was before like there were like URL.
It
wasn't
a cappella.
No,
on
definitely
beats
not.
And it was, but, you know, it was freestyle, but it was like, come on. It wasn't all, it wasn't like really freestyle. Like people came
prepared. I was off the top. Yeah. I never prepared. And then I remember when I found out that people were preparing, I was like, oh, fuck this shit. And that's when I was just like, no more. So like, I'm glad like I didn't get like super sucked into it and have that define me. Like there's been like, I got out right at the right time.
There was a definitive moment with the battle scene where kids that were doing the beat battles, it started to go to acapella, and people either chose to keep on the path of the battles or to go away from it. And I think you definitely steered clear and went the other way.
Because I never wanted to be a fucking stand-up insult comic. Like I liked doing it because I thought it was fun. You know, like, I got kicks off of it. Like, I was like, yo, this is fun. There's a crowd of people. And I never thought, I was like, man, this is going to propel me into being a great songwriter, because it doesn't.
In LA, there was, like, the Blode, where a lot of people were going to battle and freestyle. And then in the IE, there was Elements. Did you used to go to Elements?
Yeah, there's Elements and, like, Foundations, which, like, Noah James ran. And that eventually turned into the Common Ground and that whole movement. But I went to Elements a couple times when I was in high school. They used to have it like in Pomona, and I'd go and I'd fucking serve up like the dudes who were like in their 20s. I'd murk them like it was nothing. But I think a lot of like the praise and, oh my god, this guy's great, I don't think I was actually great or good at it. I just think the fact that I was a teenager and I looked, you know, I looked goofy as shit.
You've always kind of had the Billy Hoyle effect from, yeah, White Men Can't Jump, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So
you didn't look the part when you were battling, but that was like almost part of the charm of it.
Dude, it was this, like the bait and switch. Like, so it's just like, dude, you can't say anything to me that I haven't already thought of myself, or, you know. And the thing is, I was more charismatic in terms of, you know, the way I rapped and the way like I presented myself and flailed my arms. And I was funnier with my comebacks.
It's funny thinking back on it now, because when you mention that you didn't look the part, that seems to kind of be a theme. Because now I think part of the surprise and the charm of your music is like, you don't look the part of a fucking rapper right now either. You're wearing a poncho and you have a beard really long hair.
But to me, the quote unquote part, what I understand what the stereotype is and like what the expectation is, but to me, the part never existed in my head, in my reasoning, and in my eyes. Like the part and what you're supposed to be, what you're supposed to sound like, where you're supposed to come from, like that it's non-existent in my universe. Because when you'd go to Project Blode or Foundations, you'd see fucking the dopest Asian dude, you'd see Dumbfound Dead, you'd see James, No Can Do, black guy, you'd see this white guy, you'd see females, you'd see this and that. And so I'm just like, and I think that was always what I liked about making not just rap music, but music in general, is just like, there are no rules, and you get to tell your story. Who said that, you know, whoever thinks in the year 2013 that a rapper's supposed to look like this or that, you know, you got shit fucked up. You know, and that's why I got fucking mad the other day. I said, you're my favorite white rapper. Would you go up to Frank Ocean and be like, hey, Frank, you're my favorite black singer? Would you do that? No, because you look like a fucking jackass. So you saying that to me, you look really fucking stupid. I'm a white rapper. Okay, do I have to record in the white only studio? Or I'm not even white, but like, you know what I mean? Like, do I have to record in the white only studio, or, you know, drink out of the white rapper only water fountain? You know, it's not the same thing, but it's just like, it's irritating and it's stupid. And I don't play into it. And that's why, like, when I do like a lot of interviews or this and that, like, it's just, I don't even allow it. I control the narrative. I don't allow it to be a topic. Not because I'm trying to be evasive or I got something to hide. It's just because it has nothing to do with the fucking price of tea in China. It has like nothing to do with it. But I think, yeah, but I mean, to me, there is no part. And the thing is, you know, it's funny because you see like, you know, the different styles, and, you know, nowadays, like, okay, OF and ASAP and Trinidad James and all these people have like their own distinct looks and definitive style. But in the year 2005, I was the fucking weirdo. In the year 2006-07, I was the weirdo for being that, you know, and trying to rap. And now it's almost like it's your selling point, and it's your chic and how cool you are. So it's just like, I've been the fucking weirdo my whole life. Like, I'm not, you know, it's whatever. But now, you know, the fact that you can market it and, you know, and you have it be a part of your aesthetic, that's kind of interesting to me, because I never wanted to sell. I wasn't into the notion of the idea of, hey, let me sell you, you know, the fact that, you know, I look like this or look like that.
In saying that, do you think that being weird has become the norm in rap?
Well, rappers were always kind of weird, weren't they?
But think about it, like back in the...
Like De La Soul was weird.
Oh, absolutely. But think about like early 2000s, maybe Snap Rap got popular and everybody was wearing white tees or throwback jerseys, yeah. Big like fitted hats that look like top hats almost. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like everybody kind of had a uniform. Now I feel like the uniform is to have no fucking uniform whatsoever.
Yeah, the uniform is whatever you want to show up to work in. You know, exactly. Like my uniform is whatever I want to wear. If I feel like wearing a poncho or a kimono or, you know, like a cardigan or, you know, a Maple Leafs or Mighty Ducks jersey, it's whatever I feel comfortable in. But I think it's cool that people accept it, you know, and people are into it now, and that you see a lot of different artists applying that. And kids aren't stupid, man. Like, I think the kids who listen to the music and support the artists, they know, like, I think that's why they can relate, you know, like the Dirty Skater kids. Oh my, I relate to Tyler because, oh fuck, I'm that, or, you know, whatever. I think it's great. I think it's the best. But there's still that notion that, you know, you should look and sound a certain way. But I think that's kind of silly, because not everyone is French Montana. Not everyone is 2 Chainz. Not everyone is Drake. Not everyone is Mos Def. Everyone's different. And that's what makes the music special.
Like we talked about a second ago, like when you look at a snapshot of yourself from 10 years ago maybe or something, what started the gradual progression from the speak that I met at 17 to the speak that I see in front of me now? I mean, at the time I met you, I feel like you were too young to have experimented with any drugs. You probably weren't heavy into alcohol yet.
No, I didn't get into alcohol until, you know, I was like 18, 19 or like 20, you know. I didn't become like a real drinker till I was like 21. But I was, I always smoked weed. I just had the sense not to bring it around like my house and, you know, give my parents fucking headaches. So I was into weed. I think like I might have been like a sophomore the first time I did mushrooms or whatever, you know. And, you know, we had a feel with that shit, but, you know. But I think what happened was I was in school at Cal State Fullerton. Me and my girlfriend were living together, and we were having like nervous, like, you know, this horrible relationship. And she was an addict. Me, weed and booze, right? She was hardcore drug user. And so the relationship deteriorated. I was working, I was flipping burgers at In-N-Out. I fucking hated life because I was working to survive and go to school, and like then I couldn't make music full time. I was still recording. I did like Kite Flyers during that time and shit. And but my chick, the person who I loved, whatever that means, you know, that whole shit was crumbling. So when she moved to New York, and I got sick. I was getting sick with Lyme disease because I had Lyme disease and I didn't even fucking know it. I got bit by a fucking deer tick when I went up north. My girlfriend, who I'd been with for a couple of years, had moved away. I wasn't content with my job. I wasn't happy with school. I wasn't making music. And I just kind of had... When I started getting super sick, I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I went into work one day. I was like, I'm never coming back. I was like, I went in. I was supposed to be in for a shift, I remember. I showed up like 4 hours late. And I walked into the stand at In-N-Out. You know, they got the wheel with all the orders. And, you know, during the rush, the lunch rush.
Oh, that's right. You were like a manager at In-N-Out.
Yeah, they want me to be a manager.
I remember that because you were making good money at In-N-Out. And I was very
surprised.
Yeah,
but I was doing it to like survive and pay for school. Yeah. I was like, I wasn't happy. And I smelled, and my balls fucking smelled like grilled onions all day because I was fucking cooking animal fucking fries. Like, dude, that's not fucking tight.
What does Lyme disease entail? I don't even know.
Basically, it's like a poisoning of your fucking blood. Like, it's bacteria. it affects you neurologically. And I think maybe that's why I have like these bouts of like insane, you know, moments or like lapse of judgment or impulse or whatever. It destroys like your joints and your muscles. Like there were days like I would be in bed like 19 hours a day. Like I literally physically could not get up.
How do you get rid of that?
Heavy regime. Like I was on a regime of like antibiotics and an IV drip bag for like a fucking year. But yeah, so it was during that time.
So you quit the job?
Yeah, I walked in, I wrote on a piece of paper, I fucking quit, and I put it on the wheel and I spun the wheel. And then I left and I was just like, you know what? Like, I can't do this anymore. I finished the semester in college because I'm like, I'm not going to be a flunky and fuck it up for myself. Because if I want to come back, I withdrew. I finished the semester, got my grades, I withdrew. And then I just got really fucking sick. Yeah. And so that's when it happened. Because I felt, even though I was sick and like, I felt like I was dying, I felt for the first time I didn't owe anyone anything. There was no obligation to work or school or to support a girlfriend or, you know, like it was the most free I had ever felt. Ironically, like
hitting the bottom was the freeing point.
So I grew my hair out and I was like, I'm going to grow a beard and, you know, not to change or anything. I liked it. I liked having long hair, you know, and I always wanted a beard.
It's a good beard.
Thank you. I grew it myself.
What year was that?
Like 2009.
I don't want to like fucking dwell on Krayshawn shit because I know everyone always talks to you about that. Yeah. Like, is that around the time that you met? Did you take a trip to the Bay or something?
I met her when I was actually recovering
from the Lyme disease.
Yeah, I was getting better. What was I gonna say? Because me and the UTB boys, we had a house in the murder mansion, the UTB, the LS mansion. It was like the trap house. Like they were doing their branding and merchandising for Wiz Khalifa at the time. And we all just, you know, we'd ship orders all day, like smoke hella weed and then work on art. And there was this guy named Davey Boy Smith he lives out here now, but he's from England. And they founded like that hip hop karaoke shit. And they have a blog called Southern Hospitality, where it's like a UK based blog, but they always posted hella like underground Memphis, Texas, Atlanta, Bay Area, West Coast shit. Like they were just, they're in tune more than anyone, I'd say. Even to this day, they're more in tune than Complex or Fader or whatever. So what happened was, he was like, yo, I fuck with your shit. Have you ever heard of Krayshawn? She's from the Bay. And I saw like the bumping shit. And I'm like, yo, like the song's not that tight, but it is for some reason. And there's something about her that's like magnetic on camera. And that's how we became friends. And I just hit her up like, yo, we should work. And she was living in the Bay. She's like, yeah, I'm fucking down. She came out, we worked on some music, and then...
And then the rest is history that we don't have to dwell on, because every fucking interview, I feel like they always talk to you about that. And if you guys want to learn more about Speak and Krayshawn working together, go Google it. But after that all took place, the song got huge.
Yeah.
How did it change your life?
I had a little bit of money, but I wasn't really happy. I think it created, like, for me, a more turmoil, I think, you know. Not because like I was super famous or successful or anything like that. It's just because I just felt I didn't know how to, you know, I knew a little bit about the industry and I, you know, things that I still, that obviously became true and that are true. But it's just, you know, it helped induce that fucking paranoia and all that stuff and, you know, help ruin friendships and. It was so difficult. Imagine, you know, rapping, you know, spending most of your like teenage life and you know, the beginning of your adult life being like, you know, a rapper and dedicating yourself to the craft and loving it, and then having all of a sudden, oh, okay, here's a radio hit, like, and then people want you to duplicate and replicate that. But I never wanted to do that in the first place. That's why, like, I try to explain to everyone. It's like, man, you were blessed with the position, but I didn't want to fucking do it. Like, you don't understand. Like, not because I'm difficult or because I want to write, you know, pop songs. I didn't want to write pop songs. I didn't, like, that's not what I wanted to do at all. And you're crazy. Okay, a little bit, because I think anyone in that position would have been like, fuck it, I'm going to write for everybody. But I was just like, I don't want to do it, you know. But again, that's that self-destructive thing and that pride shit, you know. So it was just really weird. So all of a sudden, like, you're super in demand and everyone wants to like work with you, and everyone wants you to write for them or write for their artists and that. But it's just, so it was going down. And then the time, you know, Natasha was like doing the rounds and stuff, when they would ask her about me, she was just like, no, that's just a homie. He didn't work on no music. Or, you know, that's just my friend from LA. And that was kind of hurtful. I think it was very hurtful, because I didn't want her to be like, yeah, he wrote the song, because it doesn't fucking matter who wrote the song. The song was written. It's a fucking thing now, right? Mm-hmm. All she could have just taken the fucking, I think, MIA approach and be like, everyone knows like Diplo was helping write those songs and producing all of it. She could have just been like, oh, that's the homie. We collaborate on things. And I would have accepted that. Instead, I felt like a little betrayed, a little thrown under the bus and whatever. And I'm sure I didn't make matters, you know, any easier. So it takes two to tango. So I played my part in that shit too. But it's just pretty weird. The whole experience was weird, because we were going from like label to label and, you know, playing these, you know, these records. I mean, they'd be like, yo, we want to, yeah, we're totally into you, man. We fucking support you. Play us some of your music. And, you know, you'd be like, oh, fuck, I'm about to get on. You'd play them some of your music. They'd be bobbing their heads into it and be like, you know what, that's great, but have you ever thought of writing a song for, I don't know, and they'd throw out a fucking dumbass name. No, I haven't thought about writing a song for them, because I don't want to, you know. So, yeah, it's, you know.
Are you guys still close?
We hashed it out, you know. We mended our relationship. Like, I could say, like, I'm cool with her. She's cool with me. There's no issue at all. You know, like, I wish her the best. I wish I would have, you know, been able to help her on her album, but I think it just got so, there was so much turmoil going on around that time. It's just, you know, it wouldn't have worked in either way. But I think we should have, you know, been like, yo, fuck the bullshit, fuck everything that's going around. It doesn't matter who's in your ear, who's in my ear, what the press are saying. Let's fucking throw the balls on the table, lock ourselves in the studio, and make a fucking cracking ass album. That's what we should have done, you know. But it didn't. Again, pride, ego.
Right.
It's horrible. Right. Very, very, very sinful.
After it finally came out in the public that, like, oh, Speak wrote Gucci Gucci, meet the rapper that wrote Gucci Gucci, all the major media outlets kind of picked up on it. LA Weekly broke it, maybe. But then for a while, when you were putting out your solo music, it became like, oh, Odd Future affiliate Speak. How did that come about?
Well, because I recorded Inside Out Boy at Sid's studio, right?
How did you and Sid link up?
I always liked the Odd Future sound, not the rape and I'm crazy and this and that, but I just like the way the songs were produced. And that was her. That was like a lot of reverb, a lot of like echo things that, like, you know, I liked the hollow sound of it. And I thought the beats were good, and, you know, like, I thought Earl was tight. I thought that shit was tight, but I was more intrigued by the engineering of the records and that Sid's doing. And then, so I reached out, and I was like, you know, right before I think everything like super started like pop off for them. And I reached out, I was like, hey, I had, by that time, recovered from being sick, and I had written most, if not half the songs for Inside Out Boy. And I'm like, hey, I want to record them at your place. And she's like, yo, no doubt, like, we'll find time, let's do it. Like, she checked out my shit and she liked it. And so had I waited like another month or so, I probably would have never met Sid or anything, because, you know, after that I was, and like, I love Sid for that, like, for being so young and on the cusp of, you know, doing huge things, because that 2010-2011 run they had, everything was, oh my god, our future Wolfgang Killer.
Changed the music industry, really.
Yeah, it did. It changed things. And she was in the middle of all that, going through that, and then, you know, whatever her personal life, and, you know, going through all this shit, but she still found time for me. And, you know, didn't like try to like screw me over, didn't, you know, charge me absurd amounts for her, you know, mixing and studio time. She just wanted to see me win because she believed in the music. And so, like, I will always love Sid for that. Like I would take a bullet for Sid, like, real shit, because, you know, she gave me a chance when she didn't have to. And that's you can't make that shit up, man. That's character, and that's class, and, you know, that's friendship, and that's love, and, like, that's dope. So yeah, that's how I got involved with them. But the thing is, there was like no like.
Did you get along with everybody from the camp?
Yeah, I mean, I never had any problems. Like me and Ty would be up there working on Inside Out Boy, like working on the songs and stuff, trying to figure it out.
Ty Westside.
Yeah, Westside Ty, Beeper King. Beeper King. Yeah, so like we'd be up there and like, you know, we'd finish our session, and then like Haji and Left Brain would come up. Or, you know, or like we'd go to record and like Tyler would just be getting like done recording, and they were always like super nice and cordial to me. But I understand like during that whole time it was probably like, oh, this is really, you know, no outsiders, you know, boys club, you know, Odd Future club, which is fine because I never wanted a fucking Haji verse, and I never wanted, you know, Left Brain gave me the intro beat for the album, but I didn't fucking beg him for it. You know, he was like, yo, I'm gonna give you a beat, dog. And I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, that's great. The album's almost done. Great. And he made the intro beat for it. And I never asked any of them for anything. I never wanted, hey, tell me where Earl's at, or, oh my God, can I get a beat from Tyler? Like, I didn't, and I still don't fucking care about that. I respect them. I think, you know, they're cool guys. They're cool to me. You know, I've partied with Haji and all of them, and like, dude, it's dope. Like, it's all good. But, you know, I can honestly say I'm friends with like Sid and Matt, and I worked on their project, the internet. You know, I lended some writing for their project, so I'm friends with them, you know, and I hang out with them, and, you know, we smoke weed and, you know, crack jokes. And before they left on tour, I had breakfast with like Sid, her mom, and like Tyler's mom, and it was real nice. Like,
is running into Sid and becoming friends with her and working in that studio how you eventually met Vince, or how did you meet Vince?
That's how I met Vince.
Yeah,
that's definitely how I met. Because
now
Vince.
You and Vince are kind of partners in crime.
Sometimes,
yeah,
yeah, sometimes. Yeah, I mean, we were even roommates for like a year, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that's how I met, because I had known Vince through like, you know, the his verses on Mike shit, and then like the infamous EPAR shit, like with Earl or whatever. So I'd known Vince, and Sid was like, dude, you should meet Vince. And Vince was just, he skated up there. Vince was just up there one day, and like the moment I met Vince, I was just like, this kid is funny as fuck. And like we talk shit, and like we're like, yeah, like that just became the bro. Like, yeah, he's super talented.
You were hollering in my ear in 11, like, yo, you got to hear my friend Vince. You got to hear my friend Vince. Got to hear my friend Vince. And then we had him in at the old studio I was working in, and we did the video with him. And he wrote this amazing two verses in like 15 minutes.
Yeah, he's a genius.
Didn't have to read them to do the verse. And
no, he
did
wrote
them on,
it.
He did them on camera in like two takes.
Yeah, he wrote them, committed them to memory, and then killed it like all in a 20-minute span.
Yeah, I was definitely taken aback by his talent. And my point, I guess, is that you've always had a really amazing eye for talent. You always are putting me up on shit that I feel like, goddamn, I'm glad that Speak put me up on this. Things that you put me up on: Krayshawn, Quadrin, Vince, Space Ghost.
Yeah, we were banging the gong for Space Ghost before anybody.
Like, I'll tell you, Speak told me about Space Ghost Perp in early 2010.
Yeah, when he wasn't even getting love in Miami, when me and Ty put Rebecca at LA Weekly onto him. Yeah. So you have this unknown underground rapper from Miami who all of a sudden has, because, you know, LA Weekly is affiliated with Village Voice, etc., etc. So you have an unknown lo-fi rapper from Miami who all of a sudden gets a national, you know, who gets like a spread, like national recognition from LA Weekly. And then
I get Space Ghost Perp now. Yeah. Like, I understand it. Yeah, At the time that you were showing me his music, it was so raw that I didn't get it. I would have looked I would have looked right past it.
First two tapes are fucking incredible.
Where does that come from in you? Like, where does that gut instinct?
Just liking things.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's never like, and Ty will tell you the same thing, because I think Ty has an even better eye and ear than I do, because Ty puts me up on shit. And I think it's just about liking things and being a fan. People are afraid to be fans nowadays. If you're a rapper, it's not cool to be a fan of another rap or whatever. I say, yo, fuck that. That's one area like I'm not too prideful in or whatever. If I like it, I like it. And I just, you know, you can't describe it. You could feel it in your skin almost. Or like, yo, why do I keep singing this hook over again? Or damn, this video is tight. Or, you know, you can't, it's like they say, it's it. You know what I mean? And it's not trying to be, I'm cutting edge and I'm a taste maker and I'm this and that. Fuck all that shit, dude. Like, people walk around like, I'm a fucking tastemaker. You're a fucking
No,
douchebag.
That's one thing I can genuinely say about you is that when you approach me with new music that you're like, oh, you need to hear this, it's never like, I know something you don't know. It's like, yo, man, I fucking love this shit. You gotta hear it.
Because,
you know?
Yeah, I think music is supposed to be spread like that, right? Like, me and all my friends, you know, we used to make, like, mix CDs. Like, yo, man, dog, that's what I'm bumping, whatever. I think that's, it should be. And it's that elitism and that, like, I know this and you don't. That shit's boof. Like, that shit's stupid. And even, like, I feel fucking douchey trying to say, like, oh, we knew about, we were just putting people up on this way back in 2010. Like, I don't mean it to come across like that. Which, the thing is, like, I like spreading the word. And I even do it to this day. Like, if something's tight, it's tight. And, you know, and if I like it, I'll bang the gong for it. Whether it's Vince or Cassius Green or whoever. Like, if I like it, like, I'll go to war for you. Like, and I'll support and I'll make sure anyone who follows me and anyone who, you know, pays attention to what I'm doing, you know, I'll do my best to put them up on you. And to let them know, like, hey, this is what I like. You guys like me? That's cool. But this is what I'm into. And this is the shit that inspires me. And this is, you know, what gets me excited about the music.
Who should we be looking for?
Right now?
Yeah.
That new Speak shit, dog. I don't know who, like, I can't really say that there's, like, any acts or there's anything, like, maybe, like, Kevin Gates is super tight. He's a fucking rapper from the South.
I've just been starting to hear a little bit of buzz on
him.
Oh,
yeah, he's fucking... I haven't checked it yet. So it's not like...
When I say a little bit of buzz, I mean that I saw it on one small corner of the
internet.
Oh,
no, he's tight, but I think the hype on him is... I think people are starting to get hip to him. He's fucking sick as fuck. Like, I like Chance the Rapper, but, like, he's everywhere right now. Like, everyone's... Because he makes great music and great visuals, but, like, I mean... That's what I'm listening to, like, rap-wise, or, like, and I'll say it a million times over, like, Cassius Green and Feo are, like, you know, they are, to me, what, like, Kendrick and Q and Absol are to, like, other, you know, rap fans, and, like, I'm like, dude, I was just like, alright, like, yeah, that shit's fucking dope, and I fuck with all that shit, but they're on, you know, they're making it happen. I was like, Cassius Green and Feo, that's why when you see me live... You will always see them, or if you see them live, you'll always see me, because you know we think that's super important. But dude, Cash and Feo are better at, you know, they're elite. They're elite songwriters and, you know, and rappers, and they're fucking amazing.
Speaking of Cassius and Feo and Speak, is there any way you would retell the story about when you opened for Yellow Wolf and I was your getaway driver?
Yes.
can we tell that story?
Can we talk about that?
Oh,
Lord. All right. Beeper King has given his blessing.
Oh, okay.
Basically, we got asked to open up for Yellow Wolf January 2nd, 2011.
Right.
You know, it was like the new year had just come in or something. It was like 12, or actually 2012 or something like that. But whatever. But this is a really funny story. So, like... It was just a recipe for disaster, to be quite honest with you, because they had a million opening acts. We went on right before him. They had a million opening acts.
Which in theory should be the best spot.
Yeah, but none of them were good. You were there. You could attest to that. None of them were good. And they had no house DJ in between the acts. So they'd have these elongated periods of silence with no music or nothing. So I'm just like, oh, fuck. We get out there, you know, we start, you know, doing the thing. And the crowd was fucking with it at first. That's what I do remember.
I think what it was, too, is you made some great joke in between your first song. Because you came out to the Juicy J song.
Yeah.
And then in between your first song and second song, you made a great joke getting at somebody in the crowd. Because the crowd was already restless.
Oh, yeah. And I remember what turned the crowd. It was this fucking... And they all looked like UFC bros. The whole crowd was just like bro hoes and straight Orange County. Like,
lots of famous stars and straps.
Yeah, a lot. Dude, and it was this bald dude. I have nothing against bald dudes, but... You know, my man Lee. But there's this bald dude, and it's, you know, and he had like his Confederate flag bandana. Boo! We want Yellow Wolf. I ain't never been fucking booed. I've played all over the goddamn map. Never been booed. But boo, we want Yellow Wolf. And I, you know, you fucking suck. And he was like right in dead center in the crowd. You know, that one guy who you could hear and see, despite the fact that there's thousands there. And I stopped the music and I was like, fuck you, American History X. I was like, shut the fuck up and, you know, let me finish.
And that had the crowd on your side for a second.
No, no, that's when they turned on me. That's when they turned on me because most of the crowd looked like him. And I was like, oh, fuck. And like I knew then it was bad because people started throwing shit.
Well, they started chanting Yellow Wolf.
Yeah. And I started chanting back, suck my dick, suck my dick. And then what happened was
started throwing things.
Yeah. I don't know how they had beer bottles because there was definitely bottles thrown. I remember. I don't know if the venue sold beer bottles.
It was like full bottles of water, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, it didn't help that like I got on the speaker and I was like, $3,000 cash to whoever could beam me, you know? So I figured it's like almost like the bad guy wrestler. The crowd turns on you, you play it up, and you're like, and that's how I really felt, like, fuck them, I'm gonna be the bad guy wrestler now. So they start throwing shit, you know, we're dodging, we're moving, you know, nobody's getting touched or whatever. We get to the last song, we're like, dude, and I just turned the back, and Beeper King was DJing, and he was just, his face was like in his hands, and he was just shaking his head like, I can't believe this.
Oh yeah, I was side stage standing there going like, oh yeah. Fuck,
it wasn't,
man,
like Sick Jacking and them on the side like, these guys fucking suck. Like, we're like, I forgot who it was. It was like some, you know, some pretty well known underground acts who were there.
Yeah.
Like they were on the side of the stage like, I can't believe this. Like they were snickering like, what the fuck? You know, they're being fucking stupid about
it. So at a certain point, the full bottles of water are coming up.
Yeah, but we're not getting hit. That's the tight thing. We have yet to be hit. So what happened was, we get to the last song, Can You Accept That? And Cassius was just like, you know what? I fucks with y'all, even though y'all hate us. Like, we still fuck with y'all. This is the last song. Finally, yeah, Yellow Wolf, oh my God. So what happened was, he's rapping, and one of the dudes who I insulted grabbed him. Like, violently grabbed his leg, and that's when the fight broke out. Like, they grabbed his leg and he just stepped back and was like, fuck that shit. And then it just chaos, like mic stands, bottles.
As the bottles were getting thrown, you guys were throwing them back at it, but then I missed the melee, but I just remember seeing one of the dudes throw the mic like a fucking baseball at somebody.
Yeah,
I don't know who it was.
Yeah, I do. But and so the mic hit this dude in the face.
You kind of throw it like a lob, like a softball, a mic into the audience. And I'm going, oh, fuck. I'm like, damn, dude, we got to get the fuck out of here. So I'm like trying to walk calmly back to my car to unlock. Yeah. Because I'm thinking at this point, the cops are going to come.
Yeah. Oh, and they did.
We're escorting back to the car.
Oh, and the funny thing is, like, the stage manager's freaking out. I can't believe you guys. Are you guys fucking crazy? What the fuck, man? He's like this little white guy. And CJ gets in his face. Hell yeah, I'm crazy. I'm from the murder.
I literally like walked next to you and I said, hey man, I'm gonna go get in the car. I'm gonna pretend like I don't know you guys so nobody stops our car. Just fucking go get in my car and we'll go home. And I felt like we weren't safe until we got onto the freeway.
Feel safe until we're back in LA. But the funny thing was when we were on our way out, two police officers were on their way in.
Right.
And we're on our way out and they stopped me Right? And this is the funny part. They're like, yo, stop. And I'm like, no, dude, we got to get out of here. There's some lunatics on stage and they're throwing mics. And so he's like, all right, cool. Where's the stage? That way? I'm like, yeah, officer, it's that way. And so they go running to the stage.
You guys get in the car.
And we fucking dip.
We get out and I'm like, all right, let's go back
to
LA.
So funny.
But the best part of the whole story is none of it fucking mattered because the next day on Complex, it says Yellow Wolf assaults fan with whiskey bottles.
So it's like that crowd fucking sucked to begin with.
In the written history of that show, it doesn't matter that Speak or anybody threw microphones or hit anybody Yellow Wolf socked some kid and hit him with a whiskey bottle.
Yeah,
in the face.
And the funny thing is, like, some girl like found my Facebook at the show. And she's like, "You threw a whiskey bottle. Let it hit my sister in the face." I was like, "Bitch, you're lying because no one threw a whiskey bottle." And then she was like, "Next show in LA, you're not safe. You're not safe. I'm gonna show up with, you know, I forgot whatever fucking gang." She said, "And you guys aren't safe in LA." And then Vince comments in the box, "Bitch, shut your dumb ass up. Ain't nobody getting shot." and nothing happened. And like literally, like he's like. But that was the concern, like, oh shit, like, are people gonna show up to the shows and try to fight us? And which is like a weird thing, cause I mean, we're fucking human, and it's so unprofessional to get caught up in like those fights and shit like that, especially when there's money on the line, cause then, you know, you're always gonna be at fault no matter what. So, but the thing is, like, it's always like, the kids assume like we're some like pussy, artsy, hipster kids or whatever. And we are kind of artsy and blah, blah. But the thing is, like, at the same time, like, I'm also a grown man. I know how to fight. And, like, I'm not going to be disrespected. But, you know, for the most part, like, we like, we're all about, like, that. You know, like, I like to keep it chill. I like to be peace, you know, love, acid, all that shit.
That show kind of goes back to the self-destruction, too. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, 100%.
Because on the way there, we were like, I remember just being in the car, like, there was a palpable excitement. It was like, yo, it speaks in the backseat. We're going to kill it tonight. We're going to kill it tonight. I'm like, yeah, you guys are going to. This is going to be a good crowd for you. And then fucking boom.
It's disastrous. Yeah. But I think that's kind of like the mythos and the legend is like, oh, shit. Like, what the fuck is going to happen, like, at a speak show? Like, yeah. are the Mexicans going to fight each other in the front row? Which happens? Or is someone going to get DDT'd? Is someone going to get knocked out? Are they going to get stabbed? There's like, you know, I mean, the music's good. It's just like people like that era of like danger and excitement. But like, we're not trying to be that or promote that, like, at all. Like, because it's not, I'm, you know.
But the unpredictability works. So it
sometimes,
is what it is.
Yeah, sometimes it fucking happens. So
tell us what you're working on now. New just, record coming out soon.
Yeah, like, try to get it out by like the beginning of May. The single drops next week. It's called Bulletproof Denali. Like, linked up with Kev and the Alpha Pup guys. We're going to put that shit out. Maybe make some money. I mean, and the fans are excited to, like, pay for it, which is weird. Because I always thought, like, all right, put out really dope free music. Let them come to the show if they're really about that shit. But they're like, oh, my God, you're going to be on iTunes? I can't wait. And I'm like, whoa, that's tight. Like, you know, to me, like, I've heard the songs a million times. And they're just, it's and I'm excited about them. But, you know, it's just another notch in the cap. Like, all right, it's a phase. Like, this album is a phase, and I move on to the next, and I'm ready to create new shit. But they're like, nobody has heard it, and they're excited about it. And I'm excited about it, too. Like, I'm pretty stoked. So, yeah, the album's called Gnarly Davidson versus the Marlboro Man. And the album is, you know, it's kind of the conceptualized chronicles of everything that's happened between blowing up as a ghostwriter and now, not really ghostwriter, but just like everything that has come, like the anxiety, everything that happened in that span, like kind of blowing up as a writer or getting notoriety as a writer, getting money, losing money, being depressed, fucking these bitches. This, it's just like, you know, it's like every, it's like the last like year and a half chronicle of my life. And it's all very true and it's all very factual and it's fucking really well written.
Can you give any production credits or collab info?
Yeah, I can. I could give out a little bit because, I mean, it's going to leak anyway. Like, it's not like, oh, man. I mean, I'm waiting on one big, big, big feature to slide through. But, you know, it's a family affair. Matt Martian, Sid the Kid is involved on production and some vocals. My man Caleb Stone, who's, like, having a really, really good year.
Producing. Yeah, shouts to Caleb.
Dude, love my man, kid. Professor Kalk. Professor Kalk is, dude, he's doing like Kish and like, you know, this year alone, he's got like credits for like Kish and like Cassius and like on my shit. He did a few beats that are just incredible. Nico Gray, who I love with all my heart. She's an amazing singer. You know, Family Affair, Cassius on that shit. We got some heaters and it's like, I always joke around, I call it like Inside Out Man because like, it's, you know, it's the writing is more mature in terms of like texture, and because I know how to do a lot more things now, not just like Inside Out Boy was more rappity rap and, you know, over some me being angsty and pissed off over like some really good beats, and now it's like, all right, well, I know how to write really great hooks and I know how to write, you know, I tapped into that. So
before we get out of here, tell the people where they can find you online.
You can find me at Twitter at Speak with a Z at the end because some fucking dick already has Speak taken.
He probably has like four followers.
He has four followers and it's this company called Join Speaker. The name of the product he sells is called Speaker, but he is Speak and he has four followers. I'm like, dude, give me that fucking name, you dick. And yeah, so Speak with a Z. Instagram the same. Follow my Facebook at Hello Speak, Facebook / Hello Speak, and applebird.org is where I've blogged forever. Not really blogged, but, you know, original content.
That's the Tumblr wave.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's always been Applebird, you know, like.
I still have the Applebird t-shirt. I still rock it.
Everyone wants that shirt. I might bring it back.
So things are good, man. You're in a good place.
Life is good. I can't complain, man. I'm excited about putting out the new album and, you know, we got paid dues coming up, and it's just like a lot of cool things are falling into place. And I just got to stay focused. But now
that's what it is. Got to stay focused.
This time around, you know, a lot of people don't get second and third chances. But I've, you know, aside from the bullshit, I've lived a pretty charmed life. You know, like I'm a pretty lucky guy. So, you know, the second time around, it's, you know, we'll do it even bigger and better. I'm stoked because a lot of people would have given up on me, I think, by now. But the fact that, you know, I can make great music and I'm a good fucking person, they're not willing to let me fail. That drives me just as much as I drive myself. And I'm very blessed.
Thanks for coming in, Speak.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, man.
Hey, what are you doing later? Do you want to get some tacos? Hey, Lee.